This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez and Kusu Chuang. And we continue with the top business stories of the day. A quick reminder that after the 8 o'clock bulletin, we'll be having the breakfast grill. And our guest today is Dr. Yu Rinzi. He is the Chief Strategy Officer of Country Garden Pacific View. Because China is not just a source of interviews for us, it's also a source of and debt and loans. But also, I think, expectations of, say, tourist arrivals, which will have great impact on both our aviation and tourism sectors.
Yeah, so Peter Bellew, a chief executive and former Ryanair executive, said that China is going to be a big growth story and could easily double within the next 6 to 7 years.
Right, so we have, my CEO, Peter Bellew, and this is a clip from him.
The market from China to Malaysia, I think people don't grasp the size of the opportunity for tourism in this country. Personally, I think it could easily double within the next 6 to 7 years. Pure tourism. I'm talking about real new tourism visitors. So I would expect China to move from being like 8 or 9% of our business to being 20% in the next 2 or 3 years.
That was Peter Bellew, Mars Airlines Berhad Group Chief Executive Officer and former Ryanair Executive and Director of Kerry Airport.
Yes, yeah, right. So, of course, Mars is right in the middle of this transformation and they might be returning to the public markets. And we've had Peter Bellew on the Breakfast Grill a couple of years ago. So top of the morning to you, Peter. So interesting for them because, you know, the spillover effects from Chinese investments into the country, not just on property construction, travel, leisure. I mean, the fact is, I think we have something like 26, 27 million tourist arrivals to Malaysia at this point in time. So if Peter's right, we could double that to 52, 53 million arrivals and purely driven by China. So, I mean, this whole Chinese phenomenon is quite incredible.
And, you know, Chuang, you said that's 27 million this year for 2016. 2017, the projections are for 31 million tourists. And
yeah,
most
remember
of them
we
from
had
China,
Tsukawai from the Tourism Malaysia
exactly.
Board. And that's, I think that's the target.
Absolutely. So, and that's 100 plus billion ringgit contribution to our economy. So these are very, very sizable numbers.
What do we do? I mean, should we be exhilarated? I mean, why is it that the temperature seems to be a bit of caution? Do you know what I mean, Sharad? You know?
Yeah, because...
Why are we a bit trepidatious about this?
You know, there is trepidation, and I think it comes from a discussion, not just what's happening in Malaysia, but what's happening in other countries. We're looking at Bangladesh or Sri Lanka or Pakistan, where, analysts have come out to say, well, this is a bit of a debt trap for many countries, and, you know, we're hoping to have the Sri Lankan...
Well, it's economic colonialism,
yeah? Yeah, so there's that issue. So the idea is, how do we play smart? I mean, those who defend China and in its record say China is willing to renegotiate the terms and it's not completely imperialistic in its outlook. But the question is, how do we in Malaysia begin that process of renegotiating our relationship to China and the kind of capital inflows and projects that are coming our way from there?
Well, the Chinese government has publicly stated oftentimes that this whole One Belt, One Road initiative is not really meant to be a colonial, economic colonialism activity, but it's really to build relations. Well, but the thing is, with Chinese statements and remarks over the last few years, there's a bit of disingenuity about it. So I guess the note of caution is because of that.
But you see, the One Belt, One Road is really born out of self-interest for China. One of the key things that they are doing is essentially exporting capacity. They have tremendous domestic manufacturing capacity. They need to provide employment for their people. And so if you look at an example of Forest City, who you're going to be interviewing later, 20,000 Chinese workers were transported into Johor Bahru to build this project. And you know, the first phase is already out.
Yeah, but in Malaysia's case, I mean, workers, especially in the construction industry, are all imported, whether they come from Indonesia or Bangladesh. Yeah. They would have to come from outside, yeah. Right? I mean, in some countries where you do, in fact, have locals that can take up positions, that may be another question. What about diversification? What about Malaysia not just depending on the China success story and its coattails? What about looking at India and all those other countries, the Middle East, that also could supply opportunities for our
industry? Well, the overtures are being made from China and to China at this point in time, even the Prime Minister and from the top-down approach. But let's look, can we move on to this whole issue of the bed tax? Because, you know, in terms of overtures, I mean, none can be better exemplified than the dialing back by the government of this bed tax, which is, I think, used
or
to be...
Or we call the tourism tax, right?
Right, sorry, they're colloquially known as the bed tax.
Yep.
But it was tiered cost. I think the higher you go in terms of 5-star, 4-star hotels.
Yeah,
and
it started off at 250, and it was supposed to
28 bucks. I think at the top tier.
$20 for 5-star hotels.
So that's been dialed back to $10 flat rate, but not for Malaysians. If you produce your IC, then you are you're precluded from paying that.
So I think, what is the calculation in the minds of policymakers, Chuang? What are they saying? Are they saying to themselves, well, the ringgit is actually at a discount now. It's cheap for foreigners to come. And tourists are looking at, you know, the wonderful things that Malaysia has to offer. And it's not expensive for a lot of them earning US dollars or euros or whatever, right?
But
so this small amount would be great for the country's coffers, but also not a particular burden for the tourists coming in.
But you see, Sharad, a flat tax is essentially regressive. So the backpacker who comes in with very limited funds, who sleeps in a dorm bed, who pays 15 ringgit for his dorm bed, the dorm bed suddenly becomes 25 ringgit.
You see, initially when the sums were done, I think 645 million ringgit, I think on a certain assumption of like 25-30% take up of total beds in Malaysia, that was the income to the country. To be honest, Brian, the government don't really care about the bed backpackers because they don't have a huge multiplier effect. Well, the China tourists, they come in. I think that now the average is 3 days and 2 nights. They want to increase the number of nights stayed, and they want to increase the number of wallet spend. So, you know, the bed tax is just a small thing. They want you to come in. They want you to consume. They want you to buy watches, bags, car, luxury goods, shopping, retail clothing, whatever. So the impact on the retail industry, the hotel industry, the leisure industry, the gambling industry, everything, taxis, transport, everything.
So it's interesting. I was speaking to a general manager of a 5-star hotel, and he was explaining to me and asking him about the China effect. And he had very interesting, I think Dato' Siew Kawai also said the same thing. The China tourists tend to go to tourist class hotels, so 3-star hotels. That reflects the type of tourists.
Because they don't spend so much time in the hotel. They want to. I've seen in Japan, I've seen entire busloads of China tourists. They come up, you know, you've got those huge suitcases which are on wheels now, you can just wheel them along, right? I saw them in I think Ginza or something. They come out per person. They've got two huge suitcases, empty on wheels. And then at the end of the day, that bag is filled up with handbags, watches, wallets, clothing. The whole thing is filled up. And they just go back in the coach, chock-a-block with merchandise.
Now, that's the sort of China investment we want.
That's the I guess that is what Malaysia wants. That's spend the consumption.
Okay, we also have in the mix this morning the story of Top Glove, and is looking to invest some $75 million in the condom business. And we have here Executive Chairman Tan Sri Lim Wee Chai.
Compared with glove factory, the manufacturing process, the glove, because of the competition, much more competitive than condom business. So the manufacturing facility, the technology, I think, glove is much more advanced. So we have confidence that we diversify to condom manufacturing business. I think we will able to capture some market share, means to increase our revenue and our profit.
Okay, that was Tan Sri Lim Wee Chai, Top Glove's chairman.
Now, here's the interesting thing, Sharad. Already, just after a few months, earlier this year, I think sometime in June, Top Glove announced that they were going into the condom business, and initially at $30 million investment. Now they've upped it, obviously, to $75 million investment, and they are looking to produce something in the region of 1 billion pieces per annum. Now, that's really, you know, one of the things which is very interesting about this is how little China contributes. And we've been speaking about this China team. Top Gloves, as the world's number one glove manufacturer, only earns 2% of its revenue from China today. He intends to grow that. But that's really that was quite a shocking figure for me. And it shows the growth opportunity for Top Glove moving forward.
What about the fact that Top Glove is also kind of taking on the local, head honcho when it comes to condom manufacturer? Carex, of course, is the largest condom manufacturer in the world. Carex is a local brand, isn't it?
So this is a classic example of what economics lecturers always talk about in terms of, if you have, you're a primary commodity producer and you want to move up the value chain, you need to go into processing that those goods. So we used to be the number one rubber manufacturer in the rubber producer in the world, but now we are number one, number two in glove manufacturing, and number one in condom manufacturing. So I mean, that's a really good story. But if I were Carex, I think I would be worried, because Top Glove comes with a lot of inherent advantages in terms of a large customer base of their existing condom manufacturers, customers who can also buy from them. And also, Top Glove is a cash-rich company.
So we also have the story of diversification. Top Glove going for gloves to condoms. We also have the story of Supermax Corporation, which is the world's second largest rubber glove manufacturer by volume. I understand it's getting into contact lenses. Now, that's a strange leap from rubber, unless contact lenses are now being made from rubber.
I think the diversification strategy there is about margins. I think the company mentioned that the contact lens business gives them something in the region of 60% profit margins.
Okay, very interesting. We're coming up to the news, and after that, we'll have the breakfast grill. Kusu Chuang speaks to Dr. Yu Runzi. He's the Chief Strategy Officer, Country Garden Pacific View. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.